maar ik heb Mario
tērā ia ngā tai o te awarua purirua e ripu nei ki tēnei whare e tū nei ko pātaka ki runga ko te marae o te mūkai ki raro nō reira e aku nui, e aku rahi nau mai haere mai ki pātaka te tuatahi he mihi ki a koe tā whana ai tūwhera o tātou hui mo te karakia o tērā e te te e te tā, nau mai hoki mai ki pātaka. Welcome everyone, really looking forward to this afternoon's kōrero and I'll be introducing our wonderful panel here today, but just to say it's been wonderful to be able to host this, so thank you Jack for bringing this kaupapa to pātaka. And if I can just, before we move on to the kaupapa, just to indulge and to say to our, particularly a bit of a shout out and our mihi to our rainbow whānau here today, just to thank you. Thank you for your creative contribution to the arts practice of Aotearoa. I know it's definitely more vibrant and more colourful when everybody plays a part, and so to be able to give space and to have this afternoon and this kōrero, we're really delighted. So nei rā te mihi, kia koutou. I tau mai nei, kia koutou hoki. So everyone, so my name is Anna Shasha. I'm the director here at Pātaka Art and Museum. And for the last couple of months, we've been honoured to have Thresholding, a wonderful exhibition by Jack Trolove. And it's been wonderful seeing the visitors' response to the work. And it's been a delight to have. And so this artist panel is part of that. And so just to say thank you, Jack, for bringing this kaupapa back and having creating this moment for all of us to be in. So I'm going to hand it over. Oh, very shortly, I've got a few artist bios to read out. Incredibly impressive, too. So not only, it's been wonderful. So I'm just going to get back on script now before handing it over. So first we have Tāwhanga Nōpera, an artist and academic whose research and art investigates marginality and is grounded by the pā harakeke, or the nurturing family structure at the heart of Māori identity. Through rāranga and traditions of Māori weaving, Tāwhanga explores the forms of relational knowledge within our bodies. Tāwhanga has a particular interest in the ways that individuals are impacted upon the notions of power and seeks out transformative ways, pathways from traumatic experiences. Tēnā koe, Tāwhanga, nau mai. Secondly, we have Louis Zork-Neal. Our works, experimental performance and video embracing the power of body adornment to affirm their takatā puitanga. Their practice of twisting tauira tikauka, which is the cabbage tree fibre rope, attempts to bind the sacred transgender experience and with the transformation powers of taniwha and tupua, which are the spiritual beings from pūrākau Māori that can change gender and form. Louis believes that culture should reflect and be part of the biodiversity of the natural world. Their art is presented across Aotearoa and internationally, most recently in a performance on a beach in Ngāmotu, New Plymouth, with the Govert Booster Art Gallery. Kia koe, nei rā te mihi, kia koe, Louis. And te mutunga, kia koe, Jack Trolove, paints with tensions between embodiment and untethering, creating work to uplift states of in-betweenness. His exhibition, Thresholding, is currently showing here at Pātaka. Jack has been a practicing artist for over 20 years, showing nationally and internationally in artist-run spaces, dealer galleries, public art galleries and museums. Alongside a full-time painting practice, he undertakes a doctorate at Auckland University, theorising painting as trans or threshold work through the Celtic traditions of Kini. Nō reira, let's have a, let's warm up your hands in this place.
Anna, thank you for that beautiful welcome. Yeah, stunning. Always feel very brought home here in a beautiful way, so thank you. Yeah. Also just want to acknowledge Ngāti Toa Rangatira, whose whenua we're speaking on today, and this beautiful creative whare that is such a special place to be sharing and expanding some of the stories that are already woven into these walls. I want to acknowledge, well, that trans and gender diverse people have existed since the beginning of time, and so thinking back to all of the ancestors, the people that have come before us, and the people whose legacy we're walking through and carrying into the future, and the creativity and artistry that has been within our experiences and bodies also since the beginning of time. I want to acknowledge all you beautiful people who have come here today, and to acknowledge all of the kind of embodied knowing that you all bring about thresholds and transitions. We hope that our conversation today will synchronize with everything that you know and grow, and that we can grow each other in that way. Yeah, I thought maybe just to give a little bit of background or context as to the thinking behind having this conversation today. Also just to acknowledge the wonderful Val Smith, who is in the top left up here, and who is sitting in some way next to Tāhanga today. And Val's amazing, has a kind of choreographic performance practice, and yeah, has so much amazing ways to contribute to that. But they're doing it from their bed with a big bag of tissues up in Tāmaki Makaurau. Yeah. The idea we're talking today is about this idea of transness or betweenness as a kind of dynamic methodology for making creative work. It's a conversation about how our experiences of surviving and thriving between gender can harbour within them unique strengths or creative superpowers. Using terms like superpowers here is an attempt to kind of refocus on strength-based aspects of trans experiences and creativity as a bit of an antidote to the often publicised deficits around trans experiences, like mental distress and suicidality and all of that stuff, which we know are explicitly the result of discrimination and social exclusion, and nothing to do with the beautiful magic of being born a trans creature. Yeah, I thought a lot about the idea of kind of hosting this panel and like pros and cons and all the rest of it. As trans people, we often have complicated relationships with visibility. So invisibility and hypervisibility plague our communities simultaneously in different ways. Trans bodies are often the subject of invasive scrutiny and public pathologizing. So visibility in and of itself isn't kind of inherently positive. Visibility where we can control our narratives and take them beyond discussions which are exclusively about our bodies and access to healthcare and human rights, and into the frames of creativity and spirituality and energy, are actually rare. So, and I think like in terms of, sort of trans visibility in the arts, it's often, sort of restricted to like maybe artists that are explicitly showing images of trans people in artworks. So that's what's seen, but what's not visible are many of the accomplished artists, and I see, you know, out here today as well, from our communities who are making work that isn't instantly recognisable in that way, but who, when we dig a little deeper, draw on these aspects of experience in extremely interesting ways within their creative processes. So embodied knowledge of transness can become its own type of artistic engine. Well, that's what I feel. So some of the things, you know, thinking about, like, what does transness mean inside painting, inside choreography, inside raranga, inside performance? And creating a context to publicly share these maybe more nuanced discussions, I'm hoping that we get to widen some of the conversation around what trans and gender diverse people are bringing into the world culturally and artistically. And yeah, just more expansiveness around the conversations that we're having. So one of the, you know, I've been thinking about, like, how do we sort of disrupt the kind of spectacle that can happen around transness, or and one way I thought might be nice just to begin our conversation today is to acknowledge, like, my feeling is that we all have embodied knowledge about transitions and about what it feels like to be a threshold and to pass thresholds and all of that kind of stuff. And so I'm going to read a little poem in a minute as a way of kind of framing some, maybe to just jog things, but what I'd love you all to do is just to sort of think about something in your life, or in your embodied experience and your lived knowing of the world that has some kind of connection to, you know, the, I guess, that those trans qualities within yourself, or the knowledge that you have about transition. So that could be like having, you know, an experience of grief. Grief changes us deeply, you know, falling in love, desire. It could be like really practical, like moving house, or yeah, whatever your sort of way in there is. So just reflect on that, and then we're just gonna invite you to share with the person next to you, just for, you know, 30 seconds, what that might be. While you're thinking of the thing, that little magic moment that you have, your own body wisdom about these stories, I'm just going to read this poem that I found by, I found out who it was, Heidi Preby, who, anyway, I'm just going to read it, and it's about that idea that we're always kind of in shifting. So, to love someone long term is to attend 1,000 funerals of the people they used to be. The people they are too exhausted to be any longer. The people they don't recognise them inside themselves anymore. The people they grew out of. The people they never ended up growing into. We so badly want the people that we love to get their spark back when it burns out, to become speedily found when they are lost. But it's not our job to hold anyone accountable to the people they used to be. It's our job to travel with them between each version and to honour what emerges along the way. So sometimes it will be an even more luminescent flame. Sometimes it will be a flicker that disappears temporarily and temporarily floods the room with a perfect and necessary darkness. So just when you're ready, find your person next to you and just maybe share a little moment with each other. So in terms of just to sort of, so you know, kind of the structure of what we're feeling like we do today is the three of us are just going to talk for about 10 minutes about some of the ways that we think about our kind of making methods or thinking methods in connection to some of these ideas around trans magic, transness. And then from that we're just probably going to have a bit of an organic conversation and then invite any questions. Yeah. So first up, we have the glorious Louis.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko te mihi tuatahi ki tāwhanga mō te karakia. And thanks to Pātaka and to Jack and everybody who's made this happen and everybody for coming. Ko Mauau te maunga, ko te awa nui te awa, ko Matātoa te waka, ko Ngāti Rangi te iwi ki Tauranga Moana, ko called Louis Zalkniel Toku Ingoa. I'm an artist. I live in Otaki now, and I've been working on my art practice over the last, I guess since I was a kid, but it's like, but recently it's, I've been learning about my whakapapa and using body adornment and like the way that I'm presenting my own body as a basis of my practice. And this artwork up here, this was, these are takarure, which are flippers, which I can swim with them in the water, and they're made from tikoka and driftwood from the beach. That was like a way to like embody these senses of things that our tupuna might have done, and just these deep sort of knowledges that are like still in everybody's bodies. And it's like those can come from all sorts of different places. It's like at one time in the past, everybody was like very, very deeply connected to the environment, and like we still are, but it's harder to see that sometimes. And knowing that you said that trans people have existed forever. It's like that sort of depth. I really like find that really comforting to know that this isn't just a new thing. It's like we've always existed from in all these different sorts of ways. This is another. This was made from tikoka fiber again, like cabbage tree leaves, and also it's stuffed with my hair as well, like all of the hair that comes out. It's like you could imagine there's a lot. that was down in Otipoti, and we did this performance. It was like a ritual or some sort of it was like everybody came together and we all like experienced something together. And this moment in the performance, I'd been wearing that on my back, and then it got we all held the mirror or the strings that are connected to it, and it like held itself raised above the ground, and that felt like a really special moment, just like lots of people all focusing their energy on one thing. I guess all of these performances, we try to make sure there's lots of queers invited along, because that's kind of like who, I guess that's in a way that's kind of my target audience, like the people who I want to experience that. But I'm also like so happy when anybody, because everybody experiences transitions of some sort, and there's no solid limits or boundaries to these things. We're all experiencing gender. We're all experiencing, death and birth and changes in our lives. Our bodies are always changing. And a more recent performance, this was a couple of months ago. This was kind of like I wanted to scale up that idea a bit more. And so we had got this big tractor tire, and I like drilled into it and wove tikoka ropes into it, and it was up in Ngamotu on Onuku Taipari Back Beach, which is just close to New Plymouth. And I was like really wanting to make it, because I'm not like an actor, or I'm not trained in theatre or anything, and I feel like my performances are more like just me experiencing something with everybody around me. I had all these restrictions. I was wearing those takarure on my feet, and that was restricting the way that I was walking. I had to like crawl around, and I had these earmuffs which were blocking my sense of sound, and I had these fingernails made from kukuroaroa. They're like the horse mussel shells, and um, And I'd also been like growing my fingernails as well, so some of those, like those are my real nails as well, which was like, I think that sort of connection of like, I can like grow something from my body that is similar to something from the environment, that's a real like, and also the kupu Māori for this kukuroaroa is the name of the mussel shells, and fingernails is my kuku, and so there's like both of them have this word kuku, so it's like that's built into the way that that we can understand the world in a Māori way, that it's like we are like so much embedded in the environment. Just to finish off the like last weekend we had this wānanga up in Otaki, and it was based on the tikoka, and there was a lot of takatāpui invited along, and it was, yeah, and artists and all sorts of people came along, and that was, yeah, that sort of space, having it like a focused space that we were all there for a reason, to learn about the tikoka tree and learn about the rongoā that you can get from it, and we had waiata and karakia and all sorts of things that we were learning, and learning how to extract the fibres from the leaves and weave with them, and that was, yeah, that sort of like coming together, that's like another sort of performance, well, it's not a performance, but it's like that's kind of what my performance is, what I aim to do with them as well, that it's like bringing people together to experience something together, and so that felt like kind of another natural version of this, and yeah. Yeah, I think that's all I'll say. I'll pass on to Mike.
Cool.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Just want to say I think it's quite fascinating that you weave with tikoka, and that you have a practice deeply embedded in tikoka. When I was looking at some of your mahi yesterday, just the way that you metal was, it was like profound. It's like, I mean, I know that like, you know, like Bethany Hill like is really focused on Raupo. Mm. Some artists really, really focus on different types of media, but I never really thought about what a focus on tikoka can bring. So kia ora for that. Just firstly, thank you all for coming. It's a real privilege to be able to talk with, to talk in front of people about things that are really, really personal. It's scary, but it is a privilege, so thank you. Thank you also to Anna and Claire in Pātika. I've never been here before, and I'm really enjoying it so far. And I want to say thank you to also the Peter Rohl Foundation. When we were having a kai earlier, I was just reading up on Peter Rohl, and I had a bit of a tongue. I was sad to find out just aspects of his life, and made me think about my own life too, just reading about him. Like, there's some things in life that I've always known. I've always known that I'm deeply loved by my whānau. I've always known that I'm Māori, and I've always known that I live in a deeply contested place, and that it's important for me to be as Māori as I can. And that's how I was raised. And so that's the foundation that I have about myself and my identity that I don't think a lot of other people have. To be really, really grounded as a Māori person in Aotearoa, in your papakāinga, where you've never ceded sovereignty, and where you still own the land, and where your kids still walk around barefoot and half naked in the middle of the afternoon, evening, doesn't matter if it's middle of winter or whatever. And it's a real privilege. So I just want to say thank you with that privilege. Like, just picking up off Louis' kōrero, like, my work's deeply, like, rāranga is the core of my practice, and it doesn't look like rāranga, and the things that I do don't look like rāranga, but I know they are rāranga. And when I learnt to weave, like, there's this thing that happens when you're a weaver, when you're weaving, where you just go, it's hard to describe it, it's like and it's this moment when you're like, my body knows something really different, and it's going, when I'm trying to do something, I'm trying to weave something, my body's going, it's like, stop. And you try and like push past that, but actually your body knows way, way more than you do. And so that becomes a like, okay, I actually just have to step back, and I have to stop, and I have to go really slow, and let what my body knows come to the forefront. And I just want to say thank you for starting off the way that you did, because what that did is it gave us all an opportunity to think about those moments in our lives when our bodies go, And it feels like a weird thing, but it's actually a really, really powerful thing. And over the past 3 years, definitely, through the pandemic, my whole life has been one big, and I've gone far out. This has never happened before. And I've got some ways to work through it that other people don't. Because my whole life has been like, I'm going to die. But with the pandemic, it was like, I'm going to die. But actually, at the same time, I was like, yes. But I've got some privilege that I didn't have before. Like, I've got a job. I work at a university. It's the first real job I've ever had. Even though, like, I'm 46 now, so what? I've had that job for 3 years. So got my first real job when I was 43. And I'm a doctor. So it's like a real, real job. So it's like from no job, like from a job as an artist. Like, oh, you're just an artist, so you've got no job. So like, I'm a doctor now. I'm in a university. And things were so full on through the pandemic. Like, people would send constant emails, Tāwhanga, can you? Tāwhanga, can you support with this? Tāwhanga, can you? And it was like, I can't even open my computer anymore. Like, that's how full on that anxiety is. So no, I can't. And turn my phone off because I can't answer those either. And like, I live in the park and I won't have conversations with anyone else except my whānau because it's way too full on. And I didn't realise actually that my whole life has been like that. And that through the pandemic, the rest of the world slowed down enough to enable me to use the language that has been coming to the forefront. And like, I must say, I'm so proud of rangatahi in this country today. It's incredible the kinds of things that our young people talk about and the language they use and things they do. It's so healing. And so during the pandemic, I was like, right, I'm surrounded by all this language that's never really been used before. I've got a shitload of privilege and I'm going to use it. And so over the past 3 years, it really just slowed the world down in order to get to a space where I feel like, isn't the end of my life, where it's like, this is something that I can work through because I know I can work through it. I've been doing it through my whole practice. Like, I always get those moments, but this time I want to get past this moment because I think there's some really, really important learning for everyone that can be done during this time because we've all had to slow down. And I was talking with my peers like yesterday evening and I started to think, you know, actually, like, because I'm always just described as a problem, like, this work was really problematic when I went to exhibit it at the City Gallery. The curator was down with it, but the directors were like, that's really tongue-in-cheek. I don't know that you can exhibit that. And for me, that was like a full-on moment. That was like, that's rape survival. That's like me and San Fran in drag the night after surviving rape. And like, my drink was spiked, and I didn't, like, I just finished writing my master's thesis. I was in a real good mood. I hardly drank anything, and then after being in a club for a second, all of a sudden, like, I'm not in the club anymore. I'm waking up in a hospital, and I don't know where I am. And, you know, for me, like, there's really, really no place like home. Like, you know, I was in the States then, and I had to go through a bit of ceremony, but my flight was the next day, and it was like, I'm so close to home, and yet this horrible thing's happened, but it's okay. Because really, there's no place like home. And actually, it was like, yeah, there really is no place like this body. Because even though, like, the people who are hosting me and the circumstance of, like, I mean, I don't kind of remember things because my drink had been spiked, so there were lots of gaps. And I knew that something traumatic had happened, and I was a bit confused, but at the same time, I was like, no, it's all right. Going home, you're with people who are safe, and then when you get home, like, you know you'll be all right, so it's okay. And so it was like, well, there really is no place like home, because in this like body that's between these power of gender in our society, there is this thing that always happens where I'm able to, like, balance my emotions, think through a problem, and always get to the solution. And the solution is always stay alive. And that's a really, really powerful thing. But actually, I wonder if that's like that's my norm to be able to do that, but why isn't everybody's norm? Like, we live in a really dangerous and problematic world, and so why is it that only some people, like only a few people it seems like, have an ability to live more than half a life? Like, why is it that some people have the ability to shift between a masculine and feminine space to always live in a solutions-focused mode? Like, my life, from the lens of other people, is a big problem, and it always has been, especially like being a young Māori person living in the 70s and 80s in Christchurch, between Christchurch and Rotorua. Like, I was a big problem for people, and I was just a little boy. I was just a happy little kid, but I was a big fucking problem for a lot of people. And I'd hear about it all the time, like from a really young age, I'd hear, what are you doing? What are you doing? We're watching you. And I was like, oh, I'm just a little boy. And I started to think, well, like as I've gotten older and I've assumed this privilege and I'm in a space where I've got a lot of power to kind of slow things down. What I've started to think is like, actually, like I'm really, really well. Like I had a conversation with my mother the other day and she's like, you know, you haven't fixed your car and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, Mum, I'm real happy. Like I don't need to fix my car. I can afford to fix my car, but things in my life are good. So the problems that you see about my life, like they're not actually my problems. They're your problems. Like I'm in a good space. I'm real happy. And so that work is like I made it in 2010, but it really is, it's about like knowing how to find wellness in a space that is a big problem for other people, but that's actually home to me. Jump forward like a good decade. Or even more than a decade. This is like from 2016-17. And so this is like a piece of work from my PhD project. And that's kind of like bringing that problem like to the broader space of like the cultural context. Like that's definitely not, it's not just about being takatāpui and trans, that's actually about being Māori and Pākehā and a souvenir. So you might not recognise that, but that's a pokapa my tūpuna tene waitere. And normally on top of that, there's a bust of Queen Victoria, and it's one of two carved wooden busts that exist, that were ever created. And that's kind of my backyard. That's just in my village at home, and I walk past that like at least five times a day. And other people see it as this really sacred space, and it is, but it's just my backyard. That's my home. Again, it's just my home. And then I guess to flip to that last image, please, Louis. And then jump forward to like this year. And that's just me, actually. That's just me with no other thing than like that work. There's no place like Homo. Like that's the space I was thinking about when I was in San Fran experiencing trauma. It was like, I just need to go to Tarawera. Just need to go jump in the moana and have a kani and things are alright. And that's like the newest performance that I've created. And it's a real simple performance. I just put on my headphones, walk into a space where there are people, and I just start to dance like I've never danced before. And like I sing too. And like when I first started rehearsing that performance, which was about the time I started my PhD in 2012, like I did, I looked like a crazy person on the street. Like every other crazy person that's singing and dancing and just like, oh yeah, you go, here's $2. But I've rehearsed, practiced it so much, like I've danced around happy so much on the street that now it looks real professional. Like now I can see people go, because it's like, well, it seems like what I'm used to seeing is this kind of weird, unwell thing, but they do it real well and they look real good. And that dance, yeah, dance along too. And it's interesting when people start dancing along with you and you know you're the only one that can hear the music. So for me, like even though those three works are quite different from each other, they're about a journey of being a trans body and having the power to say, I'm not the problem, I'm the solution. Yeah, and that's where that work is. That work's about a solution. Because I've always kind of lived in a space of like, okay, well, it's depressing, it's hard, but yeah, find the solution. And now I'm in the exact opposite space where like everything is a solution. And actually all the problems are just exciting data to like manage and manipulate and figure through. And I realized that it was really important to get to a place where you could just be full of hope, because what I realized my life was it's always going to be a fight. There's always going to be a fight. Like it's okay, like I'm tough now, but it's always going to be hard. It's always going to be tough. It's always going to be a struggle. And I don't want to live my life like that, because that's suicidal ideation. That's hopelessness. And just to bring it back to Peter Rule, you know, like that's how his life ended. And I don't want my life to end like that. And like I've lost children to suicide. And so yeah, now my whole life is in that space of, I'm the solution. Like I stand at that threshold now. So, kia ora.
So I just want to start and straight in with this beautiful, you know, this idea of survival. And I've been working a lot with mangroves lately. So I'm a painter, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, how I kind of think of paint as this kind of threshold language. But one of the, I realised, you know, we kind of have this, you know, we all have these embodied, like, instincts around how we make, and I think so much for me, I don't sort of, I try to make not very much with my head, like much more like hands first, body first, you know, like, and so it's only been in retrospect that I've realised, like, maybe for the, like the last like 10 years, all the shows that I've done have always, they've always kind of anchored around these like, trying to understand these other kind of liminal bodies or between bodies. And so, for example, so that I did a show called Mangrove, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. And then I did one, called Keening, which is the Celtic traditions of calling between worlds when someone's passed over. And the Keener is this, sort of like, I guess a body expert who can wail and grieve in a way which allows the living to release the kind of wildness of grief in order that the world can kind of reshape enough to be lived in again. So they're, you know, shapeshifters, that's that kind of work. And I think of paintings being these, the bodies we make in paintings or in performance or in any kind of artwork being bodies that are those kind of, those bodies that can facilitate us having some kind of shifting experience. And then recently in the exhibition I've got just next door is based around the liminal bodies of like dusk and dawn. So I was kind of thinking if time was trans, if the light was trans, where are they? Who are they? And they're dusk, they're dawn. I think that's one of the kind of, I love that sort of when you're talking about reflipping the, you know, just reframing, the stuff that's supposedly problematic. Like for me, I think there was a long time of trying to look and find, you know, in history, like where were the trans artists? Where were the artists that work in the way that's going to make sense to me? Where are the, even just, you know, like where were the people? And because we've been, you know, like actively edited out of histories, for me that ended up being a beautiful creative thing because I was like, cool, okay, I've got to find these bodies because I learn body to body. So where are they? And that's when I found the mangroves who are these, how do we, oh yeah, I'll just, so we live up, and the kaipara, mahi te iu, Sisi and Simi, our old neighbours, is an area where we're surrounded by mangroves and tidal estuaries, and it's muddy and it's murky. And I was trying to find, again, I was trying to look through kind of written literature to find, you know, I was trying to be a researcher. And I was really having a lot of trouble. And then I was like, oh, look at you who I'm reading every day, like reading your marks, your language, your temperature, and I realized, oh, that's at the moment are my kind of teachers, or that's the trans kinships that I've found that can teach me how to make paintings. And so with them, they are, just in terms of like trying to have a practical minute. I used to make paintings which were kind of like this, like completely covered in really thick impasto paint. And then after spending all this time with these mangroves, whose language is like this, like it's like that kind of palette and mud. And, so I started working with raw linen and see these beautiful things here. So all of these, new metaphors that are sticking up out of the ground are literally straws for breathing. So the marks looking for oxygen. And as a painter, that is just the most exciting concept. Like marks that are looking for oxygen. That's literally how you build a painting until somebody's breathing with you, you know? So I've just got images here of a painting that's kind of coming into being to try and show you like you know, you just follow those same marks on that muddy surface and make those mangrovey marks. And then each time the tide comes in and out, it leaves another layer of silt. And so then here it is, like another washover of that sort of silt. And then the last layer is kind of, it's all kind of clumped in. But there's these, and for me, these are very muddy, dirty paintings, not like, you think I used to be quite fluorescent, and it's like, yeah, me being quite mellow and mangrovey. One of the beautiful things also about those mangroves are they have these little seed pods and they drop them. And, well, when they release their little seed pods, like with most seeds, they fall on the ground, and if they grow, they grow. If they don't grow, they just die or whatever. But I didn't think I mentioned first, though, that the mangroves are so special to me because they are threshold beings. They live between water and the shore. You know, trees aren't supposed to live in the land. They're supposed to live in the land, but these ones live in the ocean. And they survive there, and their bodies form these kind of storm breaks, which is like that, you know, having myself felt the experience of being like a storm break in gender, it's like a very, yeah, it's like I can, it's beautiful to find these beings, these creatures, but their seed pods, I keep wanting to come back to the story, they drop them, and what happens is basically they float around, they don't rot, they don't like do anything, they can float for like years and years until they're in a place that they know that they have a chance of survival, and that's when they let go. And that, and I just sort of think, you know, so much, you know, working with trans and gender diverse young people and queer people, you know, that's part of the strategy, you know, survival strategies of like how we work out how to manage that, you know. And yeah, I'm trying to pause it up.
Yeah, these like metaphors of like how we relate to the world around us. It's like we are, yeah, it's like we can like experience those as well. Like you can go and like touch a mangrove and like feel how another being experiences that as well. It's like it's not just a comparison. It's like you can connect with that, which I find that really special too.
Like, as a species, like, socially we binarize, but the rest of the species around us aren't, and like, our whole existence is in this space that is a really trans-spatial threshold, like, everywhere around us, offers us, like, real fluid ways of engaging with the world, and so what is it about us that makes us force ourselves into these really rigid spaces of being? And what do we need to do with each other or for each other to enable us to be whole people? Because like, what I've realized in my life is like, far out, finally I feel really good. And it shouldn't have taken 46 years to get there, only 47. Like how come that couldn't happen earlier? And like with my mokos now, especially, it's like, okay, their lives are going to be like this, and I'm going to make sure I use this kind of language, and I'm going to be like this. My energy's going to be like this all the time and around them, and I'm going to, and like, so, you know, with the young people I'm around, I'm really, really intentional about what I need to do to make sure that their bodies feel safe in order to just be, you know. And then it makes me go, well, actually, what do I need to do for my mum then? You know, what do I need to do for my mum? Like, she's real set in her ways, and she gets real grumpy all the time at me. And my sisters and my brother too, but our lives are really, really good, but she still gets grumpy about stuff that's irked her since, like, we were babies. And, like, what do I need to do for her to help her feel loved enough to be safe enough to just let go of that kind of stuff, you know? Because she is in a really safe space, but she doesn't feel it. And so, yeah, that's one concern I have, like, a lot. Well, what do I need to do as a trans person to just share this knowledge so that the people around me feel as empowered as I do? Yeah. But, like, nature, like, gives us all the answers all the time.
Yeah. But I feel like artwork too, like, I feel like that's, for me, seeing both of your art practices is like that. I'm kind of like, yes, see, proof! Very good thing, you know, and it's just like, it's like that thing of, I think it's, you know, a sort of trans language is everywhere, you know, and it's so rich, and it's so exciting, and it's so metaphoric and beautiful, and it feels sometimes like we pretend it isn't there, you know, so it's not like, so I think, yeah, when, the two of you have made artworks that I've seen and read about, I've just felt like, oh, yeah, it's like it illuminates what's already there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, which I think is part of that really powerful thing about stopping this story that this is some kind of new contemporary nonsense. You know, it's like, no, the ancientness of that shapeshifting is a really fucking sacred thing.
Yeah.
And a really exciting thing, and it's a thing that you know, I mean, every maker works, you know, like that's the, it's the, it's the material that we make with, you know, it's like that's how anyone makes art or makes stories or makes fucking cooking, you know, like it's these, like I've heard you speak before about that idea of kind of weaving, like drawing threads that are in different places together is literally the act of making, you know, so it's like that kind of,
At what point, and also how, were you able to, like, experience your transness as something to survive versus something that's thriving and something that's really positively, like, superpowers? And so it's like a really huge shift in thinking, which is really cool, but it's, like, definitely a transitional step that I feel like a lot of people need to take.
I use Pudako, like, I was really intentional about it. I was like, well, okay, Mao went into a feminine space and he died, apparently. But what if he didn't die? Like, what if he just transformed? Like, I go into, I'm a masculine body in a feminine space of creativity. Like, that's the womb, right? And so what's my life like? Well, if I'm Maui, like, okay, what are those narratives? And I started just to look through Maui narratives and go, oh, yeah, it's like being adopted. Oh, I was adopted. Oh, yeah, okay. And then, like, through, like, because, like, across the world, all of these meta-narratives, they map out some really basic human traits and behaviours. And so, like, I'm a big fan of the Marvel Universe because they're just ordinary people and they become superheroes, especially, like, the new offshoots. Like, here you got a young Muslim Indian, like, and she's, like, superpower. And, like, you know, these kids from the hood. And I'm like, well, Maori kids, you know, kids in New Zealand. We're all pretty fantastic. We do special things like run around barefoot all the time in the middle of winter, shorts, t-shirts, you know, that's pretty superhuman. And so what I do is I like, in my life, I re-narrate all the time exactly what's going on. Like, I'll stand in front of the mirror and especially if I get a negative thought about myself, it's like, no. Don't you talk to yourself like that. The rest of the world will talk to you about like that, but don't you talk negative to yourself. Like, this is who you are, you're a superhero, and today you're going to conquer this. And I talk to myself like that all the time, and it might seem like a fantasy or a lie, but, you know, like, I'm a great believer in fake it till you make it. And, like, my life has proven to me that if you practice something hard, like, if you just practice little bits of things, like, it just starts to assemble in yourself. And, like, belief, you know, your truth, what is true, is just what you think more often. You know, and so if you change your thoughts, you can change the way you be, and you can change the world around you, and it doesn't seem that it should be that easy, but really it is, because, like, as people we have so much power, and as trans people, we're actively creating who we are. Like, other people, they've got jobs or they've got relationships that they can use to help frame who they are. But as a trans person, you actively go, I want to look like this. I want to be like this. I want to speak like this. I want to say these kinds of things. I want to dress like this. I'm in control. And, like, other people don't have that kind of control over their lives. And so it's, even though it feels really confused and fraught with problems, like, if you're able to find, like, ways to talk yourself up, it's not a bad thing. Like, in Te Arawa, we do it all the time. People don't like Te Arawa. They're like, oh, Te Arawa, stop themselves. But what I love about being in Te Arawa and being from Te Arawa is that everyone's like, I'm the best in the world. And my cousin Enya, we were talking about my cousin Enya, like, I'm the best. Oh, I'm the best in the world. Hakare Kaz. It's like, yes, you really are. It's not a lie. And it's absolutely not a lie. It's not a lie. He is. And, like, people in my community have gotten so good at talking about themselves in a good way that now it's the truth. And that can be the same for all of us, and I don't see why it shouldn't be.
And, like, the ability to be able to be in this space of being trans and also being an artist as well. It's like there's all these people who have, like, fought so hard to be able to do these things. And, like, I feel like, for me, I'm in a privileged space with this in some ways that I haven't. Like, I guess there's, like, the suppressing of things when I was younger, but then, like, moving into this, into what I am now, I feel like I haven't, there hasn't been a whole lot of resistance, and that's like, so thanks to all of the queers and the tupuna and the artists who have already done all of this, and really, yeah, there's, yeah, people in this room as well who have like made that possible, and yeah, but there's still a long way to go to make sure everyone can do that easily, because it should be easy. It should just come naturally to everyone to be able to be whoever they need to be. And
yeah. I used to feel a lot of doubt that the future would be bright, but actually now it's just like, oh my God, it's happening. It's really, really happening. Like, people are transforming and people are being happy, yeah. And people are doing powerful things, and it's and yeah, maybe it's just a lie I'm telling to myself. That's a good lie.
Careful.
Yeah.
That's the truth. Yeah, I think it's the other thing that makes me think about is, like, you know, climates, or like the idea of kind of temperature or whatever. So I remember in the past working around kind of, you know, LGBTQIA plus young people, you know, communities with young people around, like, stuff in schools, how and what would happen is, like, when there's discrimination or homophobia, transphobia, whatever, and a young person's getting a, you know, having a hostile shit time, the reaction would be like, oh, send that kid to a school counsellor, you know, and it's like, no, the climate is the problem, not that person, not that child, you know. So it's like, and I feel like there's big, beautiful shifts happening to it, thanks to a lot of work of people in this room, and further, you know, around Aotearoa, but to really kind of flip that idea of, like, the point is to look at the systemic or the structural stuff. So the climate is the kind of climate that whoever comes into is just going to flourish, and it's not a flippant conversation, you know. And I think in terms of, like, the you know, the question that you had before about it made me think, I feel like the work that needs to happen in the world is that all of us, and people who aren't trans or don't have that kind of connection, begin to kind of trust and appreciate and build, like, become more conscious of the qualities of transness, of in-betweenness, of thresholds, of, you know, like, the more that becomes a, I think the way that those qualities and moments get kind of treated in, like, wider society, but, you know, predominantly Pākehā culture, is like a blunt, you know, like, we try and quickly get over those changing moments, or like a quick ritual if we have to get it, but to the next, that, you know, instead of like loitering in there or be learning in there, or like, what is this amazing space, you know? So I feel like, in terms of, like, allyship, or how I imagine that, you know, what I imagine changing that climate is that transness is something that is, you know, I feel like artists in general, like, because that's all how we make, it's already at the centre of so much kind of process. But I feel like one of the things that is going to make it a lot easier, or, you know, I just feel like if in general we're kind of leaning into the richness of that more, that is in itself going to, like, change a climate of, you know, like that thing of, like, whatever we embrace in ourselves helps shift the temperature of, in fact, that, shall we do our little closing? I feel like we've got a little idea for this, how to kind of embed, like, you know, they're going to bring in here, you know, the brilliant Val Smith. A lot of their practice is around somatics, so, like, body, knowing through the body, and listening through the body, rather than, like, cerebrally or whatever. And so we were thinking it might be nice for us all to complete this session today by kind of again going back through our memories into our bodies and bones, and trying to connect to a time where something you can remember in your own lived experience about when transness felt hopeful, you know, or when a threshold felt hopeful. And I was just wondering if we could all just kind of, like,
just tune into that and see if we can like hear it, hear that vibration come up in the room, you know?
And you don't need to share it if you don't
want.
Yeah. Just to, sit with it and see if you can feel it.
Yeah, so we're just going to take like a minute now, a minute silence to... Okay, and you're allowed to come back out from your inner sacred transgender space. I just wanted to kind of bookmark the end of this with a poem. It's called For Belonging. It's an Irish blessing by a poet called John O'Donoghue. May you listen to your longing to be free. May the frames of your belonging be generous enough for your dreams. May you arise each day with a voice of blessing whispering in your heart. May you find a harmony between your soul and your life. May the sanctuary of your soul never become haunted. May you know the eternal longing that lives at the heart of time. May there be kindness in your gaze when you look within. May you never place walls between the light and yourself. May you allow the wild beauty of the invisible world to gather you, mind you, and embrace you in belonging.
Tūtawa mai i runga, tūtawa mai i raro, tūtawa mai i waho, tūtawa mai i raro. Kia tau ai, te mauri tū, te mauri ora, ki te katoa. Haumi e, hui e, tā, ki e.